It's an emergency Bust and Loose Baseball trade edition as Lane Thomas is headed to the Cleveland Guardians. The Nats get three prospects back for Thomas. This was one of the big questions ahead of the trade deadline. So let's break it down for you right now on Bust and Loose Baseball.
Bust and Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
It is BLD alongside Toby Altizer. I'm Grant Paulson. There is news to tend to. Lane Thomas to the Cleveland Guardians. Mike Rizzo pulls off the trade we were curious about. Do you give up a player you control through next season? And the answer, at least on the Lane Thomas front, is yes. The Nationals get a 19-year-old single-A left-hander named Alex Klemny, who's very high upside, back as the centerpiece of a three-player package. They also get a 19-year-old single-A shortstop, Rafael Ramirez, and a 23-year-old AAA infielder who will be added to their 40-man roster, who might be in the big leagues in the next week or two, Jose Tena as well. So we'll go through the package in just a moment, but let's start, Toby, with Lane Thomas traded to Cleveland.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, he's such a likable guy, and he's so important in that clubhouse. And, you know, we'll talk about the return here in just a second, because I do like the return. I just didn't think they were going to get something like that. That's why I didn't think they were ultimately going to trade him, because he is a valuable piece for this ball club. He is someone that can help with the veteran leadership in that clubhouse, because now you think about the, you know, going around the diamond. You've got James Wood. You've got Jacob Young. You've got Trey Lipscomb, you've got C.J. Abrams, Luis Garcia, Keibert Ruiz, all those guys, incredibly young. So there's a lot of youth in that clubhouse, and moving out another veteran that kind of helps those guys as an everyday player. As with Lane Thomas, you know, you were going to have to get some value back for it, and they did get some value for it. So he's going to be a missed player in that clubhouse, no doubt. He's going to be a missed player by the fans. I think people really took a liking to Lane Thomas, and understandably so. He's such a good guy and so kind, and he was someone that was just easy to cheer for, and he was fun to watch as well. He could do a little bit of everything. He had some pop. He could run, obviously, and he was leading the team in steals and had a cannon for an arm in right field. He was a lot of fun to watch. He was someone that I think everyone, whether you're a fan, whether you're in the front office, whether you're a player on the team, I think everybody really enjoyed. And so it's tough to see him, you know, moved on from, but it also does make sense.
Yeah, Lane Thomas is 28. He's going to turn 29 years old in August. He has one plus seasons left on his contract, so he would have been a free agent at the end of next year. And I guess it's possible they could have signed him and kept him around. That's unlikely looking ahead at this moment with all their outfield depth and all their outfield prospects. And frankly, I mean, it's not like he's going to make a ton of money. It's still very possible if they wanted to sign him to a couple-year deal to be a fourth outfield type or a platoonable starter maybe against left-handed pitching. You know, who knows? Maybe they do that down the road. I think he leaves and they move on with, you know, a really good feeling about the other, that they it was a good marriage. He was the organizational player of the year for 2 years. They got him from St. Louis. I don't know that if it's fair to say he'd fallen out of favor with the Cardinals, but he wasn't getting opportunities. There was a log jam with the Redbirds. They bring him and give him a chance on a bad team, and he turned into a really helpful, good major leaguer for, you know, two plus years, as we're saying. So I think, number one, this should be viewed as a massive organizational win. They traded John Lester at the deadline, literally. You know, it was one of the few deals you'll ever see in history where medicals aren't exchanged, because the deal is struck literally under the gun with seconds to go. And Lester goes to St. Louis. And when I first heard they traded Lester at that time, he had really struggled. I thought, well, maybe they'll get some player to be named later in the offseason or cash considerations. And sure enough, it's Lane Thomas, and you've heard of him, and he's actually a prospect, and he's got a chance to help, and he's done some things at the big league level. And then he became the best player on the team for a couple of years. So from that perspective, just a massive win for the Nats. Then you flip him for three pitching, a key pitching prospect and two bats, but three prospects from the Guardians. I think when you look at that from a 10,000-foot view, Toby, all around, just a massive victory in terms of you know, what you bought a property at and what you sold it at. It was a heck of an investment in Thomas that really paid off.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we can always go back to that John Lester trade, and that's, you know, maybe one of the biggest heists, if not the biggest heist in Mike Rizzo's history as a general manager of the Nationals. I mean, John Lester was really going to do nothing for the Nationals for the rest of that season, and instead you get a guy that became a stalwart for the team and really helped you through some lean years there as one of the better players, if not the best player on the team at times. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really good trade going back on that. We all know that. But then the value that you get in this trade, I think, is really good. And that's why, you know, we just talked about this the other day on our last pod, whether we thought that Lane Thomas would get moved or not. You felt like he would. I didn't feel like he would, because for whatever reason, it just, I didn't think that another team was going to be willing to give up what ultimately the Guardians were willing to give up for what, you know, maybe was viewed as a platoon bat, you know. And if you're the Guardians too, you're getting a solid baseball player where you're not having to give up too much. You know, it's a solid prospect, but you're not giving up a top prospect, a top five prospect of your own. So I think overall, like, both teams benefit. And if you're the Nationals, I think you got to be really happy with this return to bring back another pitcher that you can kind of throw into that bin you were talking about with Stewart the other day in the Winker trade. I think you throw now Clemmie in that. And I'm excited to see what they can continue to do here. I think it made a lot of sense. They got a lot of good value for Lane Thomas. And ultimately, when you think about it, like you said, if you detach yourself from the feelings you have for Lane Thomas, it makes sense considering the fact that you have so many outfielders. And so you have a guy that's only here through the end of next season, and you're able to move off of him and get another arm into the organization. I think it made a lot of sense, and the value they got, I think, is really good. And so, you know, it sucks losing Lane Thomas. It sucks that the Nationals continue to have to be sellers, but hopefully this is one of the last times they have to do this for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they'd certainly have a possibility to go out and sign an outfielder. You know, you bring in a corner guy who could hit home runs, that would make a lot of sense this offseason. But on top of that, you've got James Wood in a corner. You've got Jacob Young, who's playing elite defense and center. Dylan Cruz will be in the big leagues before the end of this season. You know, that's a projected starting outfield of the future, immediate future at least. On the way, I'm not as high on Elijah Green, who just doesn't make enough contact in A-ball, but the other four tools are all pretty special. You've got Dalen Lyle, who I'm a big fan of, who's in Double-A, who can hit. He's hitting above minor league average this year. And while the power's down, has stolen almost 20 bases. There are other outfielders in the system. You know, if Robert Hassel was healthy, he'd probably be in the big leagues by the end of the year. He's closing in on being major league ready. Further away, you've got Christian Vaccaro, who they spent big money on internationally. It seems like he's a long way off. But that wave of kind of teenagers, including 17-year-old Victor Hurtado, who's playing in the DSL, like, most of their bats in the organization are outfielders. And I'm not saying you move Lane Thomas because you got teenagers who are a good ways away, but I do think there's something to be said for, even among the big league ready guys, you know, there are some options, some plug and play ability, and it frees the spot up for the second portion of the stretch run here, maybe down the end of August, you know, a month from now, or September, for Dylan Cruz to get some work at the end of the year. One other thing I did want to mention about Thomas, and if you listen to the pod, this is something I talk about a lot, but, you know, I've seen people talk about how, well, he's been one of their best players. And yes, he was the best player on a terrible team the last 2 years. I don't know that he was their best player this year. Winker got on base and did some really good things. There have been, you know, some much more pitching performance that stood out than hitting performance. That said, I think what you've seen here recently is that Lane Thomas is going to make his money moving forward, raking lefties and probably platooning. Now, the Guardians may well give him a chance to play every day, and he's been on a heater, and maybe that'll work out as a guy with better protection and a better lineup. Now, it's been a top 10 offense in baseball this year after they were so weak offensively last year. But 326 off lefties this year, 224 off righties, OPS 922 versus 663. It wasn't a lot different the last couple of years. And if you look at his career now of splits, and I mentioned this quite a bit recently because I was kind of drill home this point that it might make sense to move him, and you're talking about Toby in almost 2,000 plate appearances in his career. He is a career 305 hitter, 306 against lefties, and a 225 hitter against righties. So it's an 85 point difference or whatever that is, 80 point difference. He's a, you know, an ops plus of, you know, 137 against lefties, big league all-star, excellent player, 84 against righties, pretty well below basically league average. So to me, you know, when you see fans who are attached to him, and I understand it, and I love the guy as much as anybody else, maybe the leader in baseball and outfield assists since the beginning of last year, super accurate arm, stole a ton of bags. He's top five in the big leagues in steals this year, despite missing a month. Like, really, really impressive stuff. But I just think when all is said and done, what the Guardians will find out and what is going to be is that he is best served platooning. And really just hitting against lefties if you want him to put up decent numbers. It reminds me a lot of kind of like a Ryan O'Hearn of the Orioles, who's left-handed. And if you only play him against righties, he can hit 300 and have an 850 OPS. I think Lane can be that kind of guy for you if you use him the correct way. So you got a thought on that before we talk about the return?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's why, you know, I'm surprised that you were able to get this sort of a return, right? I mean,
exactly. It's almost like they... The return makes you think that they view him as an everyday player, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, because you're thinking, when I looked at what Randy Arozarena drew for the when he was traded from the Rays, like, that's why I wasn't so sure that you were going to get something for Lane Thomas, because for an everyday player, that's what they got. And not to say that it was a bad return, but you felt like you were going to get probably significantly less, and you didn't get, I would say, all that much less. Like, you've got, you know, a top 10 prospect from the Guardians, and you have to feel pretty good about that for a guy that, like you said, I mean, the reason last year was such a good year for Lane is he was solid against righties. You know, not like he was incredible against righties, but he was so good against lefties, as he has been throughout his career. You laid out the numbers. But when last year, the reason that he was so much better than he had been in previous seasons is he was respectable against righties. And this year, he's kind of gone back to what he's been throughout his career, where he's just been a below average hitter against right-handed pitching. And he's still been good against lefties. And apparently, the Guardians are going to use him as an everyday player. And this is something that we've talked about with the discussions around Lane Thomas. The Nationals and Rizzo have gone out of their way to say that they view him as an everyday player versus... He kind of is a platoon player, and I thought they'd get a platoon-like offer. And this isn't a platoon-like offer, and I think that's why it's such a good, you know, trade for the Nationals. They didn't get platoon value for Lane Thomas. They got everyday value for Lane Thomas.
Yeah, it's a seller's market. I think that helps. And you know, I think they view it as it's two postseasons. They'll be in the playoffs both years probably. And he's a guy that's going to help. You know, the floor is he'll – really give you a chance to gun some guys down on the base paths. He's going to steal bases, and you know he's going to hit lefties. And if he struggles some against righties, so be it. You know, maybe you spell him a little more often than the Nats did. You use him as a runner or a defensive replacement, you know, or something like that. More importantly for Nats fans, let's get to the return, though. We'll go one by one through these three players here on this emergency episode of Bustin' Loose Baseball. We'll start with the centerpiece of the package and, frankly, the top guy of the three in terms of upside. Alex Klemny. This is a 19-year-old lefty, 6'6". He was the 58th pick in the draft last year, which was a second-round pick in the top 60, but he got top money, you know, in terms of, you know, top-round type cash. He got paid over slot, over almost $2.5 million, as a matter of fact, last year in the second round. He's, you know, a tatted-up, kind of lanky, limmy left-hander who has a power fastball with a lot of spin, pitch at the top of the zone and get swings and misses, 92 to 95. He has run his fastball up to 99. I wouldn't necessarily expect to see that, you know, every time you see him pitch. He could certainly be a 97 to 99 mile an hour, you know, max effort reliever or something like that if that was the task one inning at a time. But it's a fastball. You know, I've heard the breaking ball called a really good slider. I saw that there were a couple of sites that think his curveball is actually kind of the pitch that is what he uses as the out pitch. So I'd be curious to have a conversation with him. But the breaking ball that he primarily uses has some depth and gets swings and misses and has really gotten better over the last couple of years. And so it's right now pretty clearly a stellar two-pitch mix of plus pitches. If the changeup comes on, he would have three average or better pitches. The issue with him is going to be throwing strikes. To me, this reminds me a lot of DJ Hurst, if we're being honest. Now, he's younger. He's 19, and he's further away. He's in single A, where hers was like 3 years older and they got him in double A basically. But that's what you've got to love is this kid's, you know, in Fredericksburg. I'm going to try to go see him pitch if they have him in the Nats rotation with Travis Sakura. But 19 starts this year. His ERA is about 4.7, 69 innings, only 53 hits. Nobody gets hits off of him. He's only given up 4 homers in 70 innings, 97 strikeouts, Toby, in 69 innings. So that's just like nasty work. That's wipeout, front of the rotation, swing and miss type stuff. Average against 214. Like, that's all crazy and impressive. Here's your problem. 47 walks in 69 innings. That's why his whip is almost 1.5, which is alarmingly high. So it's more ground balls than fastballs. Lots of strikeouts. Really, really good fastball. But stop me if you've heard this before. That's why I comp him to the lefty Hurs. You know, there are plenty of games in there where he's just not throwing the ball over the plate, and there's some effort to the delivery, and he gets out of whack, and next thing you know, he's out of the game early.
Yeah, what I think is interesting is it seems like the Nationals have a proclivity for that, right? Guys that are have really good stuff, but they just can't have strikes. But for whatever reason this year, Grant, like, those guys have done well. Mitchell Parker was one of those guys, and he's not walking dudes at the big league level. He struggled recently, but for the most part, he's been good at avoiding walks. Jake Irvin's been good at avoiding walks. I mean, even DJ Hurs at times have been good at avoiding walks at the big league level, and you've seen other guys take steps. So maybe that's something that, you know, they can work on. The thing that I really like here is you've got a guy with a 70-grade fastball, and when you're just looking through the Nationals organization, like, Sakura has a 70-grade fastball. Hers has a 70-grade changeup, just to give you an idea of, like, the level at which these people like his fastball. And I think the other thing that's nice about this one too, Grant, is, like, a lot of these guys that we've talked about where you kind of throw them in that same 3-5 type starter, maybe they end up as a reliever type guy in the organization. A lot of those dudes are a little further along, and we could see them in the bigs, you know, maybe at the end of this year. We could see them probably at some point during next season. And, you know, they're 22, 23, 24 sort of range. This kid's 19. So we don't even know. Maybe he could be, you know, if you can continue to develop him, maybe he could be a little bit better than the rest of the. She's 19 years old. And I like the fact that you're getting a young kid that you can kind of mold. And it seems like the Nationals are starting to figure out some of this development. And if that's the case and you get a kid with that, that already has that good of stuff and you can continue to work with him and hopefully eliminate some of these walks. I mean, this gives you a lot of encouragement, and this, you know, this is the headliner. So, you know, if you're going to make a Lane Thomas deal, you have to get some sort of player like this with this sort of potential. And I think this is a kind of a guy that makes this deal worth it.
Yeah, he spent most of the year pitching 4 or into the 5th inning, and he hasn't given up more than 3 hits really in any start since his second outing or so of the year, looking back, or certainly in his last 10. It's been 2 or 3 hits at a time. You know, last time out pitching into the 5th, 7 strikeout, normally good for 6, 7, 8 punchies at a time. But so he's thrown the ball pretty well here very recently. You just hope that he can continue to dial it in. His average against his last 10 starts is 199 with a 2.58 ERA during that stretch. 38 innings, 27 hits, and 58 strikeouts. So I'm just surprised that he got dealt, that the Guardians put him in this deal. But, you know, they obviously, that's a pitching factory. They've got a lot of pitching depth, and maybe they're just not as interested in, you know, working with him on getting the ball over the plate. That can be, you know, frustrating and certainly lower the ceiling for a prospect. The next teenager is 19-year-old single-A shortstop Rafael Ramirez, number 22 prospect in the system beginning of the year via pipeline. Like Clemney, who was the number 8 prospect in the year start of the season for the Guardians, he's moved up in the rankings. You know, Clemney would be just outside the top 5 now, probably. And I'd imagine Ramirez would be somewhere around 15th in that system. This is the son of a former major leaguer who's a pretty good defender with a big-time arm. I think one of the things about Rafael Ramirez, as a, again, 19 years old, there's questions about the power. So I don't think he'll ever have big league power. If you see his frame, it's really, really diminutive. He's listed at 160 pounds. He's a lot heavier than that now, but I wouldn't think he's more than, you know, 175, 180 if I had to guess. It's just a really, like, wiry body. He has not hit at all this year. 55 games. He's got a sub 190 batting average. Strikeouts are not Elijah Green-like, but He does strike out plenty for a guy that doesn't hit for average, 71 Ks and 180 at bats. But I wouldn't get too caught up on the numbers at this point. Again, it's single A. He's going to be in Fredericksburg. It's a 6 foot tall middle infielder right now who's 19 with big league, you know, bloodlines, who's just filling out his body, who's trying to, you know, make more contact, but he's got really good hands and a good arm at short. And I think, you know, he's got a chance maybe to stay there or be, you know, an infielder ultimately in the big leagues if he hits enough. But again, you're talking about a teenager that you get back who has a decent little starter kit and in a good system is kind of in the middle of the top 30 for the Guardians. And it's not like he's never hit in the minors, right? This year it's 187, but we've seen him hit, you know, last year he hit 250 and had, you know, in that season, an 880 OPS. So we've seen him get on base and draw walks and do some good things.
Yeah, I mean, and this isn't the headliner, obviously. This is just another guy that can help the organization. And I like the fact that you get, you know, another infielder. If there's anything that feels like, you know, we talk about the number of outfielders, part of why they dealt Lane Thomas. Maybe they're lacking a little bit some in the infield and with catching. But, you know, ultimately, this is a guy that if you get, you know, him to come up to the big leagues at some point down the line, you feel like is a good thing. But again, it's a teenager, Grant. And I like that you're going after some guys like, you know, when you get Clemmy in the deal, you're not going to get other top guys. So you go after some dudes that might have some higher upside. And I like that. So I think just adding some more potential talent down the line that hopefully the Nationals can develop. And, you know, hopefully Rafael Ramirez can be that guy.
Finally, in this deal, the Nats get a third player, 23-year-old AAA infielder, Jose Tena, the AAA player here. Look, less of a prospect at 23 years old at the 3A level. You kind of see what you're getting. But he's the guy that's really performed this year in the minors, hitting 300, 17 homers, 14 steals, 846 ops in AAA. Has really shown well. He's actually played in the big leagues for a few at-bats in a game this year. He's got 35 career at-bats in the majors. I mentioned he'll be on the 40-man roster. I think, you know, in the fact that he'll be on the 40-man and has played in the big leagues, it's fairly easy to assume that we'll see him in the show sooner rather than later. He has played more short than third at AAA this year, but I think for the Nats, obviously, you know, third base is a spot where he might be able to play as the year goes on, depending on what's going on with Lipscomb and Garcia at second base. But you got to love the numbers he's posted at AAA and kind of a breakout statistical season in the minors, showing a lot more power than he had previously. You know, his slugs in the past had been around 440, 460, 420. This year, almost slugging 500 while getting on base about 35% of the time. You know, the book was that he's probably more of a, you know, utility type guy. But I just like the idea of, you know, it's not like he's 28. He's 23. He hasn't really gotten a chance in the big leagues, and he's showing power and the ability to run in AAA, and he can play a premium position. He's played a lot of shortstop. Like, what a nice third player to get thrown into a deal.
Yeah, I kind of like this. I mean, this is almost seems like someone, like you said, that could help the Nats this year, even if it's just hanging out on the bench and maybe platooning. He's a left-handed bat, so maybe you're looking at platooning with Lipscomb or something down the line. Who knows? But, you know, you get a nice, solid player that can help you in a little more of an immediate capacity, which makes up for losing a couple of players that were on the big league club and Winker and Thomas. So I would think that he's going to be a part of the big league roster here in the next couple of weeks and just maybe a guy coming off the bench, depending upon if they, you know, what they do with the outfield position. Sounds like they're going to call up Blankenhorn in turn for Lane Thomas. But I like what you get here. Like you said, a young guy who's still only 23 years old that maybe you can still develop and having kind of a breakout year. Sometimes you get these guys that are having a breakout sort of season. They can end up continuing to play well because something clicked for them. So that'd be nice if that's the case. But you know, again, I think all of these things, like you look at the two position players and whatever you get there is great. The headliner there is Clemmy, and if they can develop him, then that's the thing that's going to make the return for Lane Thomas worth it.
Travis Blankenhorn is getting called up to be the outfielder replacing Thomas on the 26-man roster. He's leading the entire minor league system for the Nats this year with a slugging percentage over 500. and 24 home runs on the season. He's 27, he'll be 28 very soon this week. He's not much of a prospect. In fact, he's not a prospect at all. He's played in the big leagues, including here in Washington, in a limited capacity. But he's never really gotten a shot to spend a ton of time at the major league level. Just, you know, get to play day in and day out. But 60 at-bats, 36 games in his career with Minnesota, the New York Mets, the Nationals. And now he'll probably get his most extensive playing time, at least in the next few weeks until they call up Dylan Cruz. But he will provide power in the meantime, which, especially with Thomas leaving the lineup, is going to be sorely needed. Now, the Nats, in case you're curious, have to find a way to go 22-34, I believe it is. Let me think if that's right. Down the stretch here to surpass last year's record. I believe that's what they've got to do if they're going to get past last year's win-loss record, which has kind of been a benchmark that I've cared about and want to see them accomplish. It's going to be a little harder now. Sans Winker and Lane Thomas and Hunter Harvey. We'll see if they trade anybody else. But speaking of the haul so far, before we say goodbye, at this deadline, Hunter Harvey, they got on a waiver claim for Caden Wallace and Caleb Loma Vida. Then Jesse Winker, they signed a minor league deal for Tyler Stewart. And then Lane Thomas, by way of John Lester, after 16 starts for the three players we just broke down. So you're talking about adding six players to the system in these three trades. You know, at least I would say three of them, and maybe probably just three of them, are going to end up being top 10-ish type prospects in their system. This is good work here from Rizzo and company. You guys don't have to necessarily like or enjoy the rebuild or want to keep trading big leaguers for minor leaguers, but in the same way that people were upset when they traded Soto and when they traded Candelario and so many of the other moves they made, this is the way to do it, and they're doing it right.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the national system now versus just a couple of years ago, and it's night and day, and it's not even just the top end. It's the entire top 30. Heck, Jacob Young every day is a center fielder now, and he wasn't even a top 30 prospect, according to Pipeline. So it shows you how different this national system is right now versus just a couple of years ago. And the reason is because of a lot of these trades. And yeah, it sucks when you're going through it and the ball club isn't necessarily very good, but Mike Rizzo's doing the right thing right now. And at some point, things are going to have to turn around. And I think that's something where when we get into this offseason and you start looking ahead to next year and the year after that, then yeah, that's going to be a time when it's going to be a little frustrating if it continues going down this road where it's just about the future. But the nice part is where they are right now, where they understand where they're at in this rebuild. Mike Rizzo's been doing the right thing. And, you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks, right? To find a way to get something for a Juan Soto, get something for a Lane Thomas now. I mean, it's a tough position, but he's made the right decisions. And look, I think you got to be happy if you're a Nationals fan going into next season with the amount of players you were able to add at this deadline for guys that, you know, had expiring contracts after next season when theoretically this team is getting things going in the right direction.
So there you go. Three-player return for Lane Thomas in Alex Clemmy, Rafael Ramirez, and a AAA infielder who's put up some big numbers in Jose Tena this season for the Guardians, has even got a little bit of big league time. We will be back and give you a breaking pod and another installment if need be, if another trade happens. But in the meantime, enjoy Nats baseball, and let's hope they can get a couple of wins out in Arizona.